Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Minimal contact in stadiums shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
And you're very welcome back to this Saturday's Off the Ball. Neil Tracy here with you until 5 o'clock this evening on News Talk. It's time now for OTB Football Saturday, where we are streaming live across all of our social channels on Periscope, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, you name it, and on the OTB Sports app as well. And all of our football coverage here on Off the Ball, brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. Before we dive in with the Premier League, just to bring you up to date on some of the scores happening in Gaelic games this afternoon, because the Allianz Football Leagues have returned. Latest score from Inis Skeen in Division 1 of the Allianz Football League. Kerry lead Monaghan by 12 points to 7. Dublin and Meath throw in at Parnell Park at 7 o'clock this evening. In Division 2, it's Westmeath 12 points, Laois 6 points at Cusick Park and Mullingar. Armagh and Roscommon have a 5:30 start. In Division 3, two games throw in just after 4 o'clock. Cork and Louth, that is at Porky Cueve, followed by a 4:30 start between Derry and Longford at Celtic Park. And then in Division 4 of the Allianz Football League, Wicklow absolutely trounced Antrim 7-11 to 7 points, while it's a 5 o'clock start between Carlow and Sligo. And in the All-Ireland Under-20 Football Championship semi-finals, it's Tyrone 1 goal and 10 points, Dublin 1 goal and 7. They are into the second half there. This afternoon on OTB Football Saturday, I'm joined by former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, as well as Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent, and Johnny Ward, the broadcaster and journalist. Stephen, afternoon. Johnny and Dan, you're there as well. How are you doing today, guys?
How's it going, Neil?
Good, Neil, thanks.
We might just dive in straight away with what was a fairly dramatic Merseyside derby a little bit earlier on. It finished Everton 2, Liverpool 2. Liverpool thought they'd won it late on with Jordan Henderson's 93rd minute goal was ruled out for offside after a VAR check. A couple of big VAR incidents in that game. And I suppose one of them we'll jump off with as well, because it was in the first half of the game and it involved Jordan Pickford and Virgil van Dijk. It was a challenge that ultimately left Virgil van Dijk out of the game. It was a corner was played in, cleared out, ball played back into the box towards van Dijk. Jordan Pickford came out to challenge him, missed the ball completely, and just came straight through van Dijk. Van Dijk goes off injured. Unfortunately for Liverpool, the flag had gone up for offside, so no penalty, no card given out to Jordan Pickford. A pretty huge moment, and it just feels strange when you look back on that the clip of that tackle. I was going to say that foul, it wasn't officially a foul. It is hard to fathom that just because the player was offside that Jordan Pickford can go unpunished for something like that.
Well, he can't. Like the fact that he was offside doesn't absolve Pickford. So Pickford can still get booked or indeed sent off for that tackle. You know, I've actually consulted a referee about this as well, just after the game, and they can't reverse the decision in the sense that he was offside. The referee's decision, I think this is one thing in football that isn't given enough. It's when a player is taken out by a defender, or in this case a goalkeeper, who's effectively either making a last-ditch tackle or is trying to block the shot. So what happens is the opposition or the offensive player misses his shot or hits it wide or whatever, and then he's taken out. And a lot of the time, it's not given as anything. And, you know, that's probably one of the things that in football that, a bit like players not going down in the box and not getting penalties. But the referee's choice here, this wasn't really a controversial VAR decision so much. It was, does the referee send him off? I'm not sure he does, Neil, to be honest. And that's like, it was maybe a little bit of a reckless challenge, but, you know, I don't think he tried to do him. I think he was just a little bit late. It was probably a yellow card. But if it were a red card, that would obviously have changed the game, because Liverpool lost Van Dijk. They already didn't have Alisson, and in the circumstances did quite well. But the debate isn't so much about VAR here, because VAR actually upheld the decision in terms of it being an offside. It's should Pickford have been sent off subsequent to the decision.
Steven, I would step in there. Yeah, I'd have to totally disagree with Johnny there. I think it's a blatant red card. If you look at the challenge, the ball's long gone, and he's come in right around his knee, high both feet. And listen, Virgil van Dijk might be seriously injured there. And I just think that's anywhere on the pitch. I know Johnny has mentioned like the kind of scenario that the tackle came from, but anywhere else on the pitch, I think they look at that, it's a blatant red card. And I think Jordan Pickford is very lucky to kind of to complete the game, and he did make some good saves in the towards the end of the game as well. So I think, listen, it was a very good game of football. 2-2, probably draw is the fair result, but I think Jordan Pickford was very lucky to stay on the pitch and make the saves he did to keep Everton in the game with the shots he saved. And for me, it was a blatant red.
The referee, Steve, didn't give anything. So it's like, well, what was he looking at here? Because that was
I think it's because it was the offside. He kind of looked past that decision as if to say, well, this doesn't really matter because he's already offside. But for me, you can't just go around and just take somebody out like that, whether the ball's out of play or not. It's a horrendous tackle, Johnny. That's like that. You wouldn't even get away with that back in, when people talk about back in the '80s. You wouldn't even get away with that then.
Can we just clarify? Like I thought that VAR, your referee mate there, Johnny. So just to clarify the whole thing, I don't think VAR were in a position to rule on it. Is that what you were saying, or they opted not to?
So it's kind of the same as like say I guess like an offside is given and then the goalie just takes forward out after the offside, so it's like it's not the decision is made, they can't go back in the offside because the offside was the initial decision, then the ball is out of play and obviously Pickford takes the man, so it was a separate instance.
So VAR didn't check for a red, that's what
that's saying. My understanding of it anyway.
Well, I think the referee though in the game itself should see that challenge with his own eyes and think that's horrific, because do you know what I mean, like, I'm looking at myself live before I seen any of the replays thinking what off, because Pickford should have never come out in the first place, and he's come out and literally wiped them out. It was, like he's so reckless. Like people say now, the rule is if the whether you catch the player or not, if the intent is there. For me, listen, I don't know whether he did mean only Jordan Pickford will know, but he's took probably Liverpool's strongest player out of the game, and somebody that you look at the equalising goal late on for Everton, Calvert-Lewin getting up and scoring that header. Would he been able to score that? Would he having as easy to kind of go up and score that header if Virgil van Dijk was still on the pitch? If you're an Everton supporter, you're probably happy Pickford has made the tackle. I know we're going at a different ground there, but for me, it's absolutely horrific tackle from Jordan Pickford. And listen, Jordan, he's made some really good saves because he's been under pressure a lot lately over some of the high-profile mistakes he's made. And that's probably had something partly to do with him coming out so recklessly because he was a little bit nervous potentially going into the game. But I tell you what, it's absolutely reckless and it's a blatant red card all day long.
So before
I don't think it's horrific though. If you watch it again, he wraps his legs rather around him. He's definitely trying not to do him. And if you watch it particularly, the clip that's on Twitter where you're watching it from the vantage point of you're in the stand and you're kind of on the 18-yard box, he's coming out and then he's half trying to kind of, maybe a slight indecision. He's not trying to do him to my mind. It's more of a kind of a last-ditch tackle.
But is it irrelevant whether or not he's trying to do him? Like, unfortunately, he did clatter him.
Yeah, that's the point. It's a terrible tackle for me. Like whether he's meant or not, it's horrific. He shouldn't. You can't come out if an outfield player does that, right? You could there's the thing. If an outfield player makes that tackle in the box, you're saying penalty all day long. Yes or no? All day long.
I think the fact that he's a goalkeeper,
if there's an outfield player making that tackle, I guarantee you now there's uproar, there's a red card straight away. You don't even have to think about it. Because it's the keeper, he's got his gloves on, he's kind of come out as a goalkeeper, made that challenge. I think that's the reason why he probably didn't get sent off. But for me, he's very, very lucky.
So
So
former referee Peter Walton, he was in the BT studio, they were showing the game. He said afterwards, the foul from Pickford is still relevant. Talking about the offside decision, the foul from Pickford is still relevant. Players are still accountable for their actions. Personally, it was a serious foul play. Pickford is a lucky boy. That's what Peter Walton, the former referee, had to say on BT Sports. So he's
probably is a red card.
Yeah.
So they could have punished it. They could have punished it then. This is the point.
His point is that it comes under serious foul play, and that can be outside the fact that the ball was officially out of play at that stage.
Like, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that it's an oversight that they didn't take action. Like, I mean, I know it's stretching the point a bit, but like, obviously, if it's in the same passage of play and he punches him, it gets called back. Someone gets the treatment. And if you deem that tackle to be really reckless, what's the difference then? You know, it seems odd, all right.
Looking at it back, you can definitely very easily give a red card. I don't think he's trying to do him. I think he's just clattered him. But it's probably more of a red than a yellow looking back on it.
Text in here from Mick in Finglas. I can't believe Johnny Pickford should have been arrested. Never mind sent off. In fairness, Johnny's gone back in a little bit. He says he could see a red card being given. All of that, I suppose, guys, has probably overshadowed the fact it was actually a really good game.
It was a cracking game. Liverpool are a beacon of light in tough times. The entertainment they've given, the commentator was saying they hadn't conceded seven since Shankly's era. So that was seven goals in that game that they conceded. Seven goals in the Leeds game, all told. Arsenal game was very entertaining. Today was a cracking game. I think Liverpool, to be honest, Neil, will be happy because as much as they could have won the game, to do it without Alisson and effectively Van Dijk, and to get a draw at Everton, who are, like, that's one of the toughest games, without a shadow of a doubt at the moment, wasn't a bad day's work for them at all.
No, I'd agree with you there, John. I think it's a, I know Liverpool, Henderson would be good when you look at the offside decision in the end. It's a crazy decision. But I think a point at Goodison, especially the way Everton are going so far this season, it's a huge result. It's a Merseyside derby as well, known to be Liverpool's toughest game of the season. Any ex-Liverpool players will always say going to Goodison is probably one of the toughest games. So you're coming away with a point, knowing you look at the bigger picture. A point probably both teams had chances. It was a good end-to-end game. Both teams showed their attacking flair, and I think Liverpool won't be too gutted about that, and I still think they're kind of on course to kind of go and retain that trophy, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll hear from Dominic Calvert-Lewin now as well. He scored the second of Everton's goals to bring it back to 2-2 into the second half, and we'll hear from him now speaking to BT Sport after the game.
As you'd expect in a derby, you've got tackles flying in, 50-50s, and it's physical, so, you know, there's always the chance that, you know, the ref might bring out a yellow or a red.
And 10 years you've been waiting to beat Liverpool in this Mersey derby. I suppose you'll be delighted to rescue something here.
In the end, yeah, but I think disappointed that we didn't kick on at 1-1. You know, we've done well to get ourselves back in the game. And I thought, you know, we knew that we would go through spells where we wouldn't have the ball, but we had the quality today. You know, I've had a chance myself, which I'd backed myself to put away, and unfortunately not. And then the game kind of goes the way it does, but it's coming. I genuinely believe it's coming. I thought today would be the day that we would do it, but it's not to be, so we go the next one.
You did get one goal though, with great hang time in the air. That's one of your strengths now this season.
Yeah, it's just something that I've, you know, started to play to, and one of my strengths I've started to exploit, and I've always had that, you know, in my locker, but now I've got the boys looking for me in the box, which obviously always helps, and I'm getting in the areas which I can, you know, exploit it.
And scoring goals in every game. You've surpassed Tommy Lawton's record of 5 straight league goals in the first league games of the season as well, which is not a bad thing to do. It'd been a poor start to the first half, though, wasn't it? You came out of the block slow.
Yeah, I can't really put my finger on it. Not sure why we came out of the block slow. You know, we've been doing well, and we knew that momentum was on our side. You know, confident going into the game at home. But, you know, sometimes it happens. You start the game a little bit slow, and then they went ahead early doors. But it just shows, you know, we've made strides in that we got ourselves back in the game, and then unfortunate not to kick on, you know, and go ahead. Richie at the post as well. So we had chances to go on and, you know, win it, but we didn't take them today.
Now, this isn't just about local bragging rights in the city of Liverpool now. This is about a top four challenge, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I'm disappointed that we didn't win the game. You know, I wanted to win today. And I know all the fans did too. And so in that respect, it's frustrating. But like you say, in terms of the bigger picture, we've got a point today, and we take it, and we take it on to the next game. We keep building, you know. We didn't lose, and we want to keep that unbeaten run going. Like I say, towards the bigger picture at the end of the season.
Stephen, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, someone that I think for a few years now everyone was saying if he could just put the ball in the back of the net, he'd be a brilliant player. Is he someone that actually is, like, is he looking a more complete player now, or is he just in a good run of form that we might actually just see fizzle away?
No, I think he's improved massively over the course of the last season and a bit. He's playing a lot more centrally now. I think you find him a lot more in the box, and I think Ancelotti has a big part to play in that. I remember listening to an interview with him start of the season when Calvert-Lewin was saying that Ancelotti has said to him, stay in the box, get yourself in that 6-yard box and you'll score more goals. And listen, Calvert-Lewin is a huge threat. He's 6'4", he's quick, he's strong. So, and as we've seen for the equaliser today, if you put any decent delivery into the box, there's going to be a huge chance he's going to come on the end of it. And he's starting to get his rewards. We've seen him play for England as well over the international break, and continue scoring form there. So now I think Everton have the real deal there. And as I say, people are talking about top four. They're asking the question about the top four. I'm sure in the back of their mind they'll be thinking, you know, if we keep this up, there's a chance. Because we've seen what happened with Leicester a few years ago winning the title. I still think Liverpool will take a lot to take the title off Liverpool. But Everton will be thinking to themselves, you know, if we can keep this run going, you just never know. Because anything can happen in the course of a season, especially with the lack of supporters and the COVID around. Strange things seem to be happening.
Like, it is a big result for Everton, guys, because I think a lot of us have been looking at their results and, you know, they've been going very well, but you were kind of waiting for them to have their first big game and their first real big test to see what they're actually made of. And a few minutes in, it really wasn't looking good at all, because you had conceding a goal within 2.5 minutes. You had the stuff with Pickford and Virgil van Dijk just a few minutes later as well. And to go behind twice against a team like Liverpool, but to come back each time, like, it shows they actually have a bit of metal about them now as well.
Yeah, and I think Angelotti's, you know, he's gotten a very good side there. This is no doubt the toughest opposition you have in the league. They've gone behind twice. They rode their luck a little bit, but didn't seem overawed mentally at all. You know, they were kind of rallying for a third goal at the end. Some respects, they did enough to deserve a point. They rode their luck a bit, but they're a serious top four candidate for me this season. There's just far too many doubts about some of the top sides, and they have a proper manager, which you can't certainly say about the other top four sides altogether.
Just have to go to Stamford Bridge. There's been a goal between Chelsea and Southampton with the details, Nigel Bidmead.
Chelsea 1, Southampton 0. The goal scorer, Timo Werner. An individual effort, sold an outrageous dummy to the centre-half, Jan Bednarek. That put him through on goal. He then skipped past to two or three challenges in the area before beating Alex McCarthy with a low shot. Werner playing centre-forward for the first time for Chelsea this afternoon and proving his worth. Chelsea 1, Southampton 0.
Dan, the disappointment, I suppose, for Ireland this afternoon, seeing Seamus Coleman limping off again in the first half, and it looked like a recurrence of the hamstring injury that kept him out of the international break.
Yeah, it's like frustrating for him. Obviously, it's disappointing for Ireland. He was out, but I suppose at club level, it gave them a focus to get him back for that game. And clearly it came too soon for him or whatever, so hopefully it's not too serious. I mean, it's, not to go back to the previous discussion, but obviously we'd have to see what the story is with Van Dijk's injury, because even though he can walk off, I mean, those knee injuries can be pretty complicated. So, I mean, that could add in a complete variable to the league race that people weren't expecting. But in the context of Coleman, I mean, there's obviously, you know, Sleeves would know more about this, but there's obviously grades of hamstring injury you can have, and I'm not sure which one he had to start with and what he's done today, and is it just precautionary? But clearly it's still only, I mean, oh God, yeah, it's mad to be after three games, it's strange to be talking about the next ones. But I mean, it's only around 20, 22 days or something until the next international break. So if he's aggravated it to a more serious grade, it could be problematic, all right?
Yeah, I think when he pulled up today, like, obviously the fact that he's come out and felt he was right to play today, after having the injury not so long ago, tells me it wasn't a massively bad hamstring strain. But like Daniel kind of alluded there, it's if you re-injure a muscle injury, sometimes you can make that a little bit worse. Now, I hope that's not the case, because I think from an Irish point of view, you would want Seamus Coleman back in the squad, not only on the pitch, but for his leadership skills in and around the squad, especially with the run of results we've been having.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is the case. We might just take a quick break here, guys. Coming back up, we'll probably look back a little bit over the international break of what was one of the longest international breaks I think we've had in quite a long time. But we'll just take a quick break here on OTB Football Saturday. Back in a few.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.
Now, you're very welcome back to Off the Ball this Saturday afternoon. Neil Tracy with you until 5 o'clock this evening. We're in the middle of OTB Football Saturday in the company of Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward. Guys, we spoke about Seamus Coleman before the ad break and how he picked up his injury for Everton today, having already missed the international break. So we might just get right into it now and speak about Ireland and what I was saying felt like one of the longest international breaks in recent memory. Granted, there was a game more than we normally have. It was three of them. But between the disappointing results on the pitch and all that happened off the pitch, COVID-related, it seemed like it was a fairly relentless 10 days or so.
It was, Neil, for sure. And I suppose I think we maybe touched on it briefly last week. Like, it's very unusual to have like a game like Slovakia, which is obviously the end of a campaign, a penalty shootout, that sort of epic game, and then have two games afterwards. It's generally those type of matches, you know, there's time to lick your wounds afterwards and reflect on it and not go back or remain in camp. And I mean, it does seem like the most draining time of all was between the Thursday game and the Sunday game, when they had the COVID dramas and they you know, they lost five players at last minute for the Wales match and all that went with that, and then you have another trip to Finland, and Probably you wouldn't be thinking that way if they'd scored and if they'd won a game, and I'm sure it might have flown by if they beaten Slovakia, and you have that sort of eagerness looking forward to Northern Ireland next month. But I got the impression at the end of it that everyone just needed to go and have a lie down and have a break and sort of get away from it a bit, because it just seemed like it was pretty intense. And I think as well, I think these international camps in the bubble are quite intense as it is. I mean, again, Sleeves would know from normal international breaks that in the past that maybe you might have a game, but you might get an afternoon with your family or something. You know, you might have a not so much a night out, but something, some relaxation time or just something to switch off. But of course, they're in the bubble. Now, I'm not sure how well the bubble was even managed. That's a debate that comes with it. But they didn't have the facility to say have friends and family and people coming into the hotel. And I think when results haven't gone your way and you're sort of camped there, I'd imagine it was pretty hard going for all concerned.
Yeah, Steve.
I think the fact that the results weren't great as well would add to that kind of frustration of being in that bubble. Like sometimes, if things are going well and you're winning games and there's none of this COVID kind of drama going on and everybody's in the bubble and the results and everything's perfect, then it probably isn't as bad. But because the results weren't great and there's a little bit more onus on everything else, and the couple of weeks felt like about 3 months, if I'm honest, didn't they? Like you kind of, it was dragged out, and then obviously with Connolly going back into the squad, I still think the frustrating thing for me is Aaron Connolly missing that fourth game. I know he has probably gone over, but the fact that it might have been a negative positive and he could have actually played in that game, which was the big game for me. I know obviously the Nation League games are important, but the Slovakia game is the big game. The fact that we were out a player who I think makes a huge difference, who has been making a huge difference in the way we play, and to not have him available was a sore one for me, when the fact is he could have been available in hindsight.
Yeah, and Dan, you were writing in the Irish Independent today, you've a fine long piece, who is to blame for FAI COVID chaos? After a messy week, the FAI are unhappy with UEFA, but they must review every aspect of their plans. Like, you might just run us through, I suppose, maybe the course of the last few days and where the confusion was arising between, because I think you go into details in the piece of the fact that in Slovakia, for example, they were able to do the UEFA test there and have them tested, whereas the test happening in Ireland had to be flown over to Germany. So there's a much longer wait before you actually got the results.
Not Germany, to Bristol. But no, like I just, like, obviously was doing a piece on this and just wanted to get a handle on it, because I did see Niall Quinn at one point talking on Virgin about being sold a pup by UEFA and sort of shifting the blame away from the FAI really to some degree. I think like with the whole debacle, really, I think there's almost three strands to it, really. There's definitely things that the FAI could have managed better, i.e., you know, monitoring where people are sitting on planes and maybe even the size of the craft and how they manage that. And probably they might have just, because everything went well last month, they might, I don't know, was that a false sense of security with regard to this month? That's definitely one strand of it. And even just generally, just how cases came about, how decisions were made around people travelling and what was necessary. And I think that there's a lot for them to review, and they will review. But definitely they do have a point when they talk about how Ireland would be a slight disadvantage with the UEFA system. That as much as UEFA say and have said to host, you know, to the various associations, that if you have a, you know, you may have to wait 24 hours for this standardized test that they send out. This, in these times, it's not ideal that this company, the German references, it's a German company, Synlab, that you have to do your test before the internationals with a Synlab test. It's a Synlab standardized test. But it just so happens that they don't have a lab, an authorized presence here in Ireland. So all those Irish tests that were done at the team hotel in Castleknock, they had to be, like, someone had to come over from Bristol, they had to be flown back. And that, I was wondering where the 28-hour reference was coming from Niall Quinn. And that explains why there was such a lag between the test they had on Friday, Friday in the hotel, and not getting results until late on Saturday night. And it was because they had to add travel into it.
Yeah, but this, Sorry, did that, then people win a contract or something to provide a test for UEFA?
So UEFA did a deal with this company, SynLab, and basically they are the official diagnostic partner. But like SynLab have a presence in Slovakia. So what turned out to be the false positive test in Slovakia was turned around very quickly because, as far as I know, like they went from the team hotel in Slovakia, the couple of people that relate, and to be tested 15 minute drive away, where as in the Irish case, I had to go to Bristol, their tests. That's why things were slow. So they have a valid point around the unrest ahead of the Wales game, that basically if they'd got those results a bit quicker, then maybe they would have been able to prepare a bit better for the Wales game. And you know, they would have wanted to call some players in for the Wales game. They couldn't. They ended up not even having enough outfield players on the bench. I think they were looking at either some... Now, it would have been maybe just people to make up the numbers to some degree, you know, but just the unrest before that game wasn't ideal. So they definitely have a point, the FAI, there about location-wise. They probably at a slight disadvantage with the UEFA testing. That doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, where Connolly and Eder were sitting and how they could have managed that. But of course, as I said, there was three strands. So they are the two. The third strand, of course, is it's just tough. Like the virus case, you know, COVID cases are going up. The sport ones have pretty much ran in tandem with society, you know, as in September went fine, but the numbers then were quite low. This is a bit harder now in October. The October window was way more messy than the September one. It's because we're having a bit of an upturn around Europe.
To be fair to the governing bodies, it's difficult to kind of chastise them too much because it's never been seen before, this COVID. And I suppose it's kind of trial by error a little bit as well with both the FAI and UEFA. But it's just, it's hard to kind of, I still think it's just crazy that we could have having players potentially that we didn't have. That's the annoying thing I keep saying for me.
Certainly
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no, that's very frustrating. Like, sorry to cut across you, Neil, but like that's the frustrating one, is that now, like, false positive cases do happen, and I don't want to go down the road of, like, you know, people with their theories about false positives and everything. Like, it's just unlucky. But you know, I think there's obviously just going to be, as sort of Steve says, trial and error. I think from all sides there'd be, you know, I hate that, it's almost a rugby term, learnings from it, but there probably will be.
Is a rugby term, Dan. It's not almost.
It is. Well, there you go. Well, learnings. Learnings is the buzzword. But, like, there definitely will be in terms of a lot of aspects of it. And I wouldn't be surprised, like, next month as it stands, we'll see if it goes ahead. There's meant to be a friendly in Bosnia. And then there is a game against Wales. Like, it wouldn't be a shock if they travelled differently, the FAI, to try and respond to maybe things that they've learned from this one, that you can't always assume the bubble that you're in is quite tight. Now, I think they would like, again, like they were playing by the HSC rules, which is basically what they have to do because they're playing on a HSC and Irish government exemption. It is true that their distancing rules are way more stringent, but they are travelling within... You know, like that's the point about, you know, maybe either a bigger plane, or if you go in a bigger plane, the point has been made to me, you mightn't have the luxury plane that you would have for a smaller private one. So, you know, players may not necessarily be on the quality of seating and stuff that they'd be used to, but they might just have to do that just to avoid a scenario. And also, they may have to call up a bigger squad. This is the thing. Stephen Kenny was quite big on having, pardon, it's sort of a contrary, quite big on having a small squad. Like, that was definitely one of his things, that he didn't agree with the principle of having a squad and then almost having subs in an 11v11 game. But that's probably not a COVID-proof strategy now. And UEFA did say to the member associations, you should look at, you know, 30, 35-man squads, you know, to cover the eventuality where you lose five. But I think even then, the FAI financially doing all of that is difficult, and he can't help getting away from their recent past. So there's a perfect storm of stuff, I think, that probably has affected the FAI. But there's a new CEO in now. They start from November the 1st. And I think, you know, like, their first job, Jonathan Hill, one of the first jobs amid everything, will even be looking at that November window and how they could manage it better. But certainly they are at a disadvantage with some of the UEFA testing things too. So they have cause for complaint there.
Mm-hmm. Just, I'll bring Johnny in just a second as well, just to let you know, 2-0 Chelsea now at Stamford Bridge. Timo Werner scored his second of the game. Dan, to go back on a few things Johnny said there, and it's actually something that Dan would have said last week as well, when we were talking about Connolly and Ida, that the, as you said, Dan, the bubble is a bubble, and you're putting a bit of faith in the fact that that bubble isn't breaking. But I think one thing we probably learned over the course of the international window, not just with Ireland, but with lots of different countries, is that it's very hard to bring players together from different countries, different parts of a country into one group, start a new bubble from scratch on a Monday morning or a Sunday night, and have everything go swimmingly over the course of 10 days before sending them back to their clubs again.
Yeah, is that to me, Neil? Sorry.
Yeah, just to all of you in general, I should say.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And like that's the thing. And like, there's a lot of money at stake with these. And I made the point in the piece today. I mean, like each Nations League game is sort of estimated to be worth around €1 million to each competing association. And I know the Nations League is not the most glamorous competition. It doesn't have the significance of a World Cup or a Euros qualifier. But the games are about cash, ultimately. It's about... When we talk about the centralised TV deal that's so important to the likes of the FAI, it's to do with a minimum number of games being part of the deal. And Ireland's Nations League games come, you know, very much come into that category. So there is, from UEFA's point of view, a real... I don't think desperation is the wrong word to use, that to make these windows survive, because they're facing into a big issue with the Euros next summer, the 12-nation Euros next summer. I think there's certainly scepticism about whether it goes ahead in its current format. Like I mentioned in the piece again today, there's around €300 million worth of tickets, hospitality, a lot of tickets sold already tied in with that. You face a situation where you have to sort of break contracts, or you know it can't go ahead. Suddenly UEFA's financial picture isn't as healthy as it is at the moment, and then that has a negative effect on the likes of ourselves, who very much rely on UEFA handouts. So there are factors at play here, which is why there's a determination for the games to go ahead. But as you say, clubs are naturally going to look at this. There's all sorts of clubs today, this weekend, missing players on account of the international break. And I mean, who knows? We're seeing COVID cases pop up in sports and teams away from international football. You can't just trace it to it, but of course it's adding more risk to it. It's adding more flights, it's adding more trips, it's adding more potential. And you can see why we're going to have complications, I think, with this November window in terms of it happening. There seems to be a real official determination for it to go ahead, but I was also told that the feeling was, let's see how this weekend goes at club level. If they have more tests coming back that are traced back to international break, then maybe it gets more tricky. But if they maybe get through it without that much disharmony, then it might survive. But it's a tough one. Yeah. It's very tough.
That's the off-pitch stuff. We'll get to the on-pitch stuff now with Ireland. So after the defeat to Finland, I probably noticed after the Finland game, it was the first time I really saw some of the pundits starting to go in a bit harder on Stephen Kenny. We have a couple of them here that we're going to play for you. First, here's John Giles speaking on Off the Ball, and then after that, we're going to hear from former under-21 manager Noel King.
It's a very interesting point, because I think a lot of people would feel that Ireland struggled to hold on to possession, and actually that one of the first things Stephen Kenny had to do was get a team who were comfortable passing the ball, who were comfortable in possession. What you're saying is that, yeah, you want to be comfortable in possession, but there's no point having it if you're not going to do something with it.
Well, yeah, well, the possession is fine, Nathan, and the concept of it is very, very good as well, but there's two forms of keeping possession. There's possessions that I see now, not just from Ireland or Stephen, but generally speaking, the fullback gets it, he passes it into the centre back passes the centre back passes out the left back, and then it comes across the pitch. That's possession, and that goes on your stats. But you're going nowhere, Nathan. You're not going anywhere. You know, what happens with the good teams, they can do that, and they've got top midfield players who get on the ball, turn on the ball, and bring the forwards into the game. We don't have those midfield players.
So are we
and
back?
Therefore, if we're going across the back, we're going on the back across again, and in my opinion, not getting anywhere. And I don't want to be critical of Stephen, because Stephen believes in that in its early days for him. But that's the way I see it. The Welsh match, for example, we had the Welsh lad had a 6'9"
Kiefer Moore
forward,
yeah,
and we had long playing, and again, I'm going back to my day, and people might think I'm talking in my day, but the centre forwards used to be target men. We used to call them target men. In other words, if you got it deep, You could knock it up to them. They usually had a partner with them. Either could knock it on or hold on to it and bring the midfield players into the game. That's what they used to do. Now, in the Welsh game I saw, they had a 6'9" player playing for Wales. He never did it once. And we had Long playing up front and didn't do it once. So that's been the change in the game, because the centre-forward is not their fault, because it goes across the back, it goes into midfield, it goes back and it goes across the back again. So they could be running all day and they're not getting the ball. So I think it's been overdone.
I've played these managed these teams. I've played 4-2-3-1. As I said, it's a system that's out there. The harsh reality is the expectations of Ireland is massively, massively overhyped. We're a small little country. We don't have a proper full-time professional league. The facilities in Ireland are atrocious around the League of Ireland. And we have ambitions of English rather than ambitions from Ireland. That's just the way we are. We're the poor relation of sport, League of Ireland soccer, the GAA, the rugby. They must be delighted at the moment. Some snapped them off, but one or two of them would be delighted that we're struggling. And I said, I just find it sad.
But our players, as you said, are playing in England in the Premier League. There's a good chunk of that squad, particularly at the first few weeks of this season, who are playing well in the Premier League, in, as some would argue, the best league in the world. So other countries of similar size, like Iceland are often thrown out there, have achieved and have overachieved. So should we not be actually thinking like that, that yes, there's any amount of issues and like God knows where we are going with the FAI and the debt of it. But
I think in the past we have overachieved, but wasn't playing in a possession game. With Jack Charlton, we overachieved. Mick McCarthy qualifying for Euro finals. Martin O'Neill qualifying likewise. That was an overachievement for me.
Is qualifying to the Euros overachieving? Like 24 teams out of 48, essentially?
Well, are we going to do it this time?
Yeah, so that was Noel King and John Giles. Just before we bring in the lads, another goal at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea and Southampton. Nigel Bidmead.
Chelsea 2, Southampton 1. The visitors back in it with a goal courtesy of Danny Ings, his fourth of the season. Kai Havertz gave the ball away. It was slipped through to Ings. He went round the goalkeeper and slotted into an empty net. Chelsea 2, Southampton 1.
Johnny, I'll give the first word on those videos to you. John Giles saying possession but going nowhere. The passing game is being overdone. And then Noel King saying our expectations are overhyped.
Yeah, I don't know if we have high expectations. I mean, we haven't really been playing good football for a long, long time. We've achieved very little. When we've gotten to tournaments in recent years, we've done very little there. I think the fact that we're a soccer mad nation who basically have many of our players playing in the Premier League and a lot of them playing the Championship, which is still a very high standard, means that we justifiably can say and look at Northern Ireland and say, well, maybe we should be doing at least that well. Look at what Iceland have done. But the basic kind of tenets of what they're saying there, you know, I just cannot agree with that. Our possession stats, you can say the only thing that matters is the scoreline, which is, of course, absolute nonsense. And anyone who's going to look at even the scores over five games in such a bizarre kind of window, the last three games particularly, scores are almost irrelevant. It's what sort of way we're trying to play football. And the difference in this team compared to what I've been watching essentially all my life as an Ireland fan is absolute chalk and cheese. You look at the likes of Horan, who, and again, I don't like what John Giles is saying there, we don't have the midfielders. We didn't have the midfielders because our midfielders weren't encouraged to play football under previous regimes. You know, what we did under the likes of Martin O'Neill, and not so much under Mick McCarthy, but to an extent, we basically were very direct. We played, you know, a kind of an agricultural style of football. We nick goals from set pieces. And whilst the only goal that Stephen Kenny has gotten in those five games was from a set piece, the general patterns of play and the freedom that the players have and the confidence that he's clearly inculcated in them, if anyone can see the progress we're making, I genuinely don't see what's the point in watching football if you can't see the difference. And Stephen Kenny has been true to his manifesto, which is like, I want to change the way we're seen to play football. And anyone who watched those games, the Finnish fans and the Bulgarian fans, would say, actually, Ireland, that's not the Ireland we used to know. There were some really good patterns of play. And the important thing is that we created lots of chances generally. Laterally, particularly the last game, we created lots of chances. I don't really care that we didn't score them, because I do believe if you keep creating chances, the players will get the confidence. And lastly, these players are literally chucked together, a lot of them. You know, even the players that have played together before played a completely different system where they had a different MO. They may have played in different positions. Stephen Kenny even changed his own kind of tactics. I was massively encouraged by the five games. And anyone who thinks we're not making progress just doesn't know what he's talking about, to my mind.
Stephen, I might bring you in here. Earlier on in our Saturday panel, we were doing a review of the week, and one of our guests was Alison Miller, former Irish rugby player. And I was asking her about maybe her own experiences of having a new manager coming in and trying to change a style and how that works and maybe how much time it takes to blend in. And one thing she said that I thought stood out was, if the players believe in the change, then, you know, it's going to eventually, you're going to start seeing the signs. I think one thing we have seen over the few games under Stephen Kenny, the players clearly seem to believe in the change. It's just getting that final little bit of execution and maybe believing in themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, listen, I think it's watching the games yourself. I listen to Johnny there, yeah, and Stephen has come in and definitely changed the way we're trying to play. There's a lot more combinations and football. And listen, that Finland game, that we could have scored a few goals in that game. We created a chance. I agree with Johnny as well. But I think the overall change in general, it's one of them. It might take a little bit longer than people think. And if we are going to stick with this and we want to change the philosophy we're playing, I think Steve and Kenny probably will need a little bit more time, because at the moment, I know we have quality players, but I would look at the Finland game. Although we create chances, I still think they had more quality than us in and around the edge of the box, kind of picking little passes, because they tried to play as well. And listen, we need to get to a stage where we can kind of, in my opinion, we should be beating the likes of Finland and teams like that. But at this moment, playing that way, it might take a little bit more quality, a little bit more time for Stephen just to kind of develop his plan. And he was missing players as well. Yeah. All the drama with the COVID doesn't help. But again, it's one of them. You just need to give him time. And people, there's an argument out there I've seen saying, well, can you use the senior international to develop a style of play? Well, if we don't use that to develop the style of play, then we've got no chance. Because I can understand the argument for and against, because it's one of them. If Stephen Kenny keeps trying to play this way and he loses the next two games and we end up getting relegated in the Nations League and we're playing kind of against lesser teams, then from a bigger picture, the kind of it's not as romantic. If people aren't going to get excited going to watch the lesser teams if that's who we end up playing. But if it means that we get relegated and we end up playing these teams but develop our style over the course of the next 2, 3, 4 years, then I think over time, then you probably have to say it was a success. It'll be a success. But again, it's just whether people want to give Stephen this time and whether Irish fans in general want to wait for this change to totally happen, because I don't see it happening overnight. Everybody can see what Stephen's trying to do, but I have a feeling, like, we're not going to get results straight away, like big results. I think it'll take a lot longer than people expect. It's not going to be just a quick switch. I know I've listened to Gary Breen as well on this show and other shows speaking, saying people are going to come in and expect things to happen straight away. It's impossible to change that straight away and get results. But listen, on another day we could have beaten Finland, and would we be having this conversation? Everybody would be saying, look at the football we played. We scored 2-3 goals. Everybody's happy that we hit the crossbar. Keepers made some great saves. So that's football at the end of the day. And that all goes down to it being a results-driven business. And it's whether you want to give Stephen Kenny the time to get these results, or you want to, as Irish fans, think, no, we want to be in these tournaments straight away. What is the best way to qualify at this moment in time where our players? Is it getting up around these teams the way we a little bit more direct, or is it trying to find a kind of happy medium in between this nice football and playing a little bit direct? Because I do agree with John Giles to an extent. Watching that Wales even Ireland game there last week, I'm watching that time thinking, what's the point of Moore and Shane Long being on the pitch? Because Shane Long obviously thrives and balls down the side, and I think that's why John Giles mentioned that, because I just think we're not going to see much of Shane Long and Stephen Kenny's team if he continues and he is given the time, because it doesn't suit the way he plays, and that's just the way it is. Managers have their styles, and if we want to be successful with this, we're going to have to give him time. But again, people, like we've already seen, five games in or a win, one goal scored, people can say, oh yeah, we give him time, but eventually people are going to start thinking, you know what, we need to start winning games, because that's mightily important as well at international level.
Yeah. Dan, we'll bring you in just after the break. We do have a couple, few more bits to speak about. on the international scene. First, though, halftime whistle is gone at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea and Southampton with the latest, Nigel Vidmead.
Chelsea 2, Southampton 1. Timo Werner has scored both Chelsea goals. His opener on 16 was his first in the Premier League. He sold a dummy, skipped past a couple of challenges before scoring with a low shot. His second on 29 came from a Jorginho long ball. Werner read the flight of the ball, beat a defender to it, lobbed it over the goalkeeper before heading it into an empty net. But the visitors reduced the deficit just before half-time. Danny Ings with his fourth goal of the season after Kai Havertz had given the ball away. Chelsea 2, Southampton 1.
In the Allianz Football League, Kerry 17 points, Monaghan 14. That is a full-time score. Well, Dublin beat Tyrone 114 to 112 in the All-Ireland Under-20 semi-final. Time for a quick ad break. More coming up on OTB Football Saturday in a few minutes.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.
And you're very welcome back to Off the Ball this Saturday here on News Talk. Neil Tracy with you into the final 20-25 minutes of our show this Saturday. I'm joined on OTB Football Saturday by Daniel McDonnell, Irish Independent football correspondent, broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, and former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott. And just a reminder, our football coverage is brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. Guys, we're going to go to something completely different here, and it's a story that cropped up on Thursday, I think it was, and involves Dundalk's defender Daniel Cleary. So this stems from a podcast a former Liverpool Academy teammate of his, Tom Brewis, did, the Football Journeys podcast, where he spoke about his journey through the Liverpool Academy. He's since been released by Morecambe, he's without a club. But he spoke about an incident in January 2016, when it was himself and probably Daniel Cleary who were kind of on the verge of making a breakthrough when Liverpool were having a bit of a defensive crisis. So I'll read out some of these quotes. I presume you've all heard it or read it at this stage, but just for those at home who haven't, these are some of the quotes. Myself and Dan always got on, but I think I ended this relationship. I took the decision it was me or him who would get the debut, so I went after him in training. I put myself next to him in possession games, put myself next to him in games, and I just kicked him. I wasn't trying to hurt him badly, but I was trying to hurt him enough so he was out of the way and I would play. It was about a week before the Exeter game, and I took a heavy touch in the seven-a-side game, and he came in to tackle me, and I waited a split second too long and absolutely topped him. Went over the ball. It was a bad tackle. I knew it was a bad tackle. I did it on purpose, and I'm not incredibly proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it either, because in my head it was him or me and I was choosing me. There was a bit of a scuffle after. I think he got sent in for his reaction, but his reaction was probably bang on. He was on crutches for the next 2 weeks, so it was sort of like not mission accomplished, because I think that was harsh and I didn't want to hurt him. I just needed him out of the way for this game. Stephen, as a former player, are these quotes an example of a player actually being honest about something that might happen the odd time, but people just don't necessarily talk about it or admit that it happens? Or is this just something that isn't done? This is a cardinal sin. This is a kind of a breaking the trust in your fellow professional.
Listening to it there, I'm sure it happens sometimes in the game. Like the nearest thing I could probably, during my playing career, I'd probably have to go back to my time in the Academy of Man City when Joey Barton was in the U team. I remember there was talk he was going to be released from the academy team under 17s, and there was actually a young Irish lad there at the time, Damien Joyce, and a couple of other lads from the UK in the squad. But I think Joey, after he got wind that he would have been released, he just got into his head, you know what, I'm not accepting this. And listen, whether he'd done this on purpose, ever since he found that out, every time in training after that, you could just see there was an extra edge in Joey, and anybody else in his position when he was up against him in the small set of games, he was leaving some on them, and it was like actually helped Joey, because all of a sudden these lads kind of went into the shell a little bit, and Joey was able to express himself a little bit more on the pitch. Now, it wasn't, as I said, it wasn't just snapping people's legs or anything, but it was just letting people know that, listen, if there's only one place to be had in this squad going forward, I'm going to make sure it's mine. And maybe it's just a scouts thing. I don't know. Is the lad from Liverpool, is he?
I'm not sure exactly. But like, I suppose there is a slight difference between the two, where like you're talking about Joey Barton there. You're saying, you know, obviously you don't know exactly what his plans were. There can be a difference between putting yourself about and trying to step up and be, right, I'm going to be the one who's putting in the extra bit for this ball, and then there's actually admitting,
I just wanted
to hurt his ankle or hurt him in some way to put him on crutches for a week or two and take him out of the opportunity for taking my place.
What was the podcast? It may have been one of them where he was trying to tell a story and kind of give it the bravado one on the podcast to make it sound a little bit like kind of more interesting, and that whether he kind of put a few bit of arms and legs on the story, I don't know. But it is true, man. I don't know many players now, especially teammates, that go out and purposely injure it. I've never come across a guy that come over and purposely injure a teammate over the top of the ball, like just to kind of get their place in the team. But again, maybe that's just me being naive. But from my point of view, against forwards, you were never really up against anybody in your position, like in attacking sense. Maybe it's more of a midfield thing, like kind of if you're up against them directly in training and you want to kind of kick them just to say, okay. But I don't know. I was a bit surprised when I read that. That's totally true. As I said, he doesn't sound incredibly pleased that he'd done it, but he wasn't sorry, was he?
It was disarmingly open, almost,
and calm.
The podcast was like, it's, I think it's called Football Journeys. It's basically, yeah. As the name would suggest, people who've been in football talking about their journey, and it was like one section of an hour long interview. But I mean, it was a sort of a frank admission. You could see as he's almost speaking about it, because there's actually a video of him talking about it, that you could see him almost just becoming more open. I don't know that he realized, God, this is really, you know, this is really blunt. And like Daniel Cleary himself was incredibly, the people who did the podcast tagged Daniel Cleary into it. So he was tagged into the audio of someone describing how they'd tried to knock him out of a cup tie with Exeter. And Daniel Cleary responded pretty strongly, and as did a number of his Dundalk teammates, actually.
Did this other guy play in the game against Exeter?
He picked up a head injury before the game and actually missed his own opportunity.
He did say himself maybe it was karma. He also said himself that it's possible neither of them would have played, that he got it into his head that Cleary was his rival, and that was it. It was two centre halves, and he just had it in his head. This was the guy. He obviously thought, well, this was early days of Jurgen Klopp. Yeah, yeah. I remember Cleary under Rodgers had maybe been brought to a Europa League game, so like he probably was viewed as one of the better players in the academy. But like, you know, this is the thing for someone like Daniel Cleary looking at this, that could have been life changing to be involved. Like Daniel Cleary has rebuilt his career. Eventually, he didn't play a senior game of football anywhere in England but Liverpool or Birmingham. And maybe if he just got one or two appearances, I'm not saying it would happen for him at Liverpool. I'm not at all saying that. But obviously, it to have that on your CV, I guess it might have, you know, it might have just taken his career in a slightly different direction.
Yeah, listen, you never know, do you? All about getting these little breaks. Now, there's no guarantee the likelihood is you get what you like, especially at a club like Liverpool. I think if you're putting the effort in and you're kind of spotting for doing well, you do get your break. But again, that could have been his moment missed, and maybe it doesn't sit right with Daniel Cleary at all. And for it to be brought back up in a podcast, and that guy speak, I can't even remember his name, speaking about it so kind of calm and clickly as if it's not a bother to him, whereas Daniel, it might kind of be something that kind of lingers in Daniel Cleary's mind and kind of has affected him over time. We don't know what goes through people's minds. But now if he's done that purposely, then for me that's disgusting.
Yeah, as Cleary said in the tweet himself following it, he said, "I was lucky to walk away from that tackle with my leg in one piece." And Johnny, we were talking about karma because it segues nicely to the fact that here you have Dan Cleary. Yeah, it didn't work out for him at Liverpool, but he's preparing now for a Europa League game this week.
Yeah, it's a strange game, you know, the paths that you can take. And actually, he's a player, you know, he's very impressive at times, Dan Cleary, his use of the ball. And he had, like, the amount of players who've come back and would on the face of it look like certainties to make it in the League of Ireland. And probably just mentally, when you're on a bit of a downwards kind of trajectory, maybe it's difficult even. And the League of Ireland now is, I think, in a much better place in terms of how it's viewed and maybe even perceived in England in some respects. But it's difficult, you know. The only compliment I can give that bloke, and I don't really care what his name is because he's not worthy of being named, is that he was so honest, because like that is absolute scum that you would even think of doing that. Not to mind the fact that he wanted to kind of, you know, go in on a bad tackle, but like he could have seriously injured him all for the sake of playing a game of football. Like, I just said he
got on well with him as well.
Daniel seems a good lad, you know. I don't know, maybe they wanted the podcast to get good hits and we're talking
That's
about
not
it here
saying,
in Ireland.
Like, if you're saying you're tagging him in, that this is all part and parcel, maybe it's a
little... There is this debate, and I'm not really sure like what the answer is. What is justifiable in terms of a game and in gamesmanship and sledging and all this? Well, like, it was never in my armory to do anything to put off a player. Like, it's not my nature to put in a bad tackle on purpose or to say something to a player. But like,
you're too nice.
Yeah, but it's kind of lauded in ways. You know, you often hear, He's horrible on the pitch, but thankfully he's on our team and not the other and all that. Like, I don't know. Sleeves might know what's justifiable. Like, I mean, because
the thing is, though, like, obviously he's speaking there about a challenge where he's upended him, he's gone really high in him, and he's left him on crutches for a couple of weeks. But there's other ways as well that you can kind of get into people's heads. Like, it might be.
Were you up to no good?
No, I'm just saying it might be a case of just like kind of saying to somebody in your position, oh, you're struggling, you aren't you? Oh, you probably should have put that chance away. Or maybe if you're a centre half, put another centre half, God, maybe you're not winning your headers. Like, no, just put little doubts in people's in your positions, kind of just to try and make them have a kind of get it into their head a little bit, like a little just kind of mental battles. But the physically,
were you a big talker, Sleeves?
Not to my own teammates. I was always of the case against opposition. Yeah, I'd always give them little smart comments, like just trying to get an edge on them. Like,
you're a lovely bloke. You're a lovely bloke. Like,
no, but the thing is, though, like, and your teammates, you don't. If I was when I was at clubs, I played up front majority of the time and in attacking areas, and there was always the majority of the clubs I was at. There was always four strikers, and you played in a 4-4-2. So you were one of the two, and if you weren't playing, you were on the bench, but you knew you'd probably get 25, 30 minutes. That was just the way you kind of walked, you know, on the hour, 70 minutes you come on. So I would never, like, you kind of looked out for your teammates and those in your position, because I was always looking at the bigger picture, like potentially getting promotion, winning 3 points, win bonuses, everything that goes with winning the matches. So again, we're talking about academy football and breaking into a first team environment. It's a little bit different than when you're actually in that first team squad together. Do you know what I mean?
I'm curious now on the talking, Stephen, actually, as well. Were there ever any occasions where you did a little bit too much and a defender made you look like a right mug afterwards?
No, it wasn't stuff like that, Neil. It was just, I remember, I go back to the Hearts-Hibs Cup final when I played, and that Mike Pape was captain of Hibs, and he was arguing with Tom Soares, I think, the guy that was playing in the midfield, like, because we were beating him and they were having a pop at each other. And I could just, like, you can tell if somebody's a bit of a hothead knowing you're marking them. I think Mike Pape, what didn't come across to me is the kind of brightest lads. And I just kept saying, you want to hear what that source has said about you? He says you're absolutely rubbish kicking balls out of play. He says he doesn't know how you're captain. Now, I was just making this up, but I could see a man pulling and start shouting at your man. I was just running off laughing, thinking these guys are stupid, you know. But because I got wind that there was a little bit...
means, you know?
Yeah, but I got wind there was a little bit unrest in that squad at the time, just because you'd hear it about Edinburgh. But you're in the cup final and you want to get an edge, don't you? And I was just like kind of having my own little crack to myself on the pitch.
I suppose it was a day when you could do that happily enough, because you coasted away with that one.
Yeah, well, that was even before we got the goals, though. I was saying this, Neil. Do you know what I mean? Because that was just one incident. But you're always having a bit of banter with guys you're coming up against, like, and majority of the time it's good natured, like. So, but again, I'm sure there's a lot more kind of players out there that are a little bit more evil than I was on the pitch. That's for sure. Because I never made any tackles or done anything. Think kind of that even remotely deserved yellow card. I think I've had 3 yellow cards in my career for probably shouting at the ref or throwing the ball away or something like that, but no.
Very good. So, right, we need to get some team news from the Etihad Stadium, because there's a big game this evening happening between Manchester City and Arsenal, with the details of the team news, Darren Stanage.
City are boosted by the return of their all-time leading scorer Sergio Aguero. He is fit and starts. That's one of 4 changes. Bernardo Silva replacing injured De Bruyne. Cancelo and Ake come into the defence. As for Arsenal, 3 changes for them. Holding, Xhaka and Pepe come into the starting 11. David Luiz and Nikita and Elneny come out. City looking for a reaction from their last home game, of course, that mauling by Leicester. Arsenal looking for a 4th win from their first 5 games. At the Etihad, Man City against Arsenal.
Dan, before we move on from Dan Cleary, Dundalk, as I mentioned, Europa League coming up in the next few days against Molde. How are things shaping up for them? A draw last night against Bowes in the league.
Yeah, look, it's very hard to know how it's going to go, to be honest. I mean, they're definitely they're playing okay. They haven't conceded in their last three games, but they haven't necessarily looked that sort of amazing going forward. So, it's always going to be tough for a League of Ireland side at this level. Of course, it is, and it's not the best League of Ireland side that we have at the moment. So, it's going to be a challenge. Like the group they have, I mean, it's a great group, and I think I said it at the time. It's the perfect group, really. Mm. They have the glamour of Arsenal, then they have. Okay, Rapid Vienna are decent, but Molde probably from the Norwegian league. I mean, it's definitely a far stronger league, but I mean, Shamrock Rovers beat Brann last year. Like, we have recent evidence of our sides being competitive against Norwegian teams. So they are probably the games that you're looking at, that the Molde games in particular, where they have the best chance. Molde at home this week. I say at home, I mean, it's not in Oriel Park. It's not in the Aviva. It's not in Windsor Park. But it's going to be in Tala. They've tried to take it anywhere and everywhere. And it's going to be in Tala Stadium, I think, in the end, which sums up the fact that the club itself is still a bit mad, really, at the moment, because of off the scene, you know, off the pitch stuff. Football-wise, I think they're primed to sort of give it a real crack. But, I mean, I have to say, like, just...
Are they, Dan, really? Like,
I think they have their best 11 against Molde will have a very good chance of being competitive against them, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, competitive means that they're competitive. They have a chance. Doesn't mean they're favourites. Doesn't mean I necessarily fancy them. I'm just saying that if they have a going day, they have the chance. Like, Molde aren't that good that they're on this other level, whereas obviously they're going to have that issue with other games in the group. But I mean, the buzz just isn't there that was there 4 years ago, because like, it's not as if fans are preparing to go to the games. It's not as if fans are booking trips and ready to go to Arsenal and stuff. So there's almost like there's a niggling sense of anticlimax about the whole thing. But I hope that changes. I think maybe come Wednesday they're probably in the stadium. They have all the UEFA paraphernalia. Okay, not quite the music, but you know, the buzz around the game, the way the stadium is done, you know, the real sense that you're part of this European wide competition, that the game, the highlights of the game, you know, will be watched in loads of countries around Europe. Like, it is a big stage, and I think that would give them a natural boost. But it'd be nice to talk about fans being able to go to it, and I still feel I'm going to be in the ground on Thursday, and you'll be thinking, like, the Rovers and AC Milan game, which was great occasion. But you're there going, there should be people here. You know, it's just definitely, it's a very different type. But you do get to hear some of the sledging that goes on. Apparently, Zlatan was able to give a bit back in that Rovers game, apparently. So, I don't know, probably a higher grade of sledging than what Sleeves might have been involved in over the years. But it's great to be a part of it for them. But it's obviously very different. Like, they're going to the Emirates the following week. But I think it was Gary Breen before described the Emirates, the buzz around the stadium and the crowds, the bus going through it and stuff. They're not going to have that, but they're still going to have memories to last forever in a slightly different way.
Yeah, we're coming into the final couple of minutes here, guys. Quick word, Stephen, just very short. Manchester United play Newcastle later on this evening, 8:00 kickoff. This is a really tricky one for United to be going into now after the, you know, the 6-1 hammering against Spurs, and you see everything that's gone on with Harry Maguire during the week, Paul Pogba speaking about Real Madrid again last week. Like, if they have a bad result tonight, they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and Newcastle are in decent form as well, and usually you have a full packed out St. James Park where it'll be empty, but still, Newcastle made some good signs. It'll be a tough game for Man United, and it's like Ollie doesn't seem to be able to catch a break at the moment. The world seems to be against them, but again, you're looking at the squad, the quality of the squad, Man United, on paper. They should be able to kind of put a good performance in and get a result and start kind of getting points on the board again. But again, Steve Bruce will be fancying his chances against his old team. He's managed to put together a really good squad. They've signed some really decent profile players. Callum Wilson has hit the ground running as well. Obviously, Jeff's done okay for Newcastle in the games. Fraser's done okay. So that's probably... Listen, it's Newcastle at the end of the day. They'd probably be mid-table to come the end of the season. But again, it's a tricky tie because they're in decent form and they've got pace up top, which is something that United will have struggled with.
Just a game as well, Neil, that it would be remiss of us not to mention. Cork City playing Waterford at home in, I think, 7 minutes' time. Effectively, I think if they lose this game today, Cork City will be relegated. And in terms of where Dundalk have had a pretty madcap season, the demise of Cork City has been actually quite sad. And there'd be a real, like, in these days of no crowds, there actually would be a bit of a feel-good story if Cork could kind of pull themselves out of this. Lost their manager there recently, Neil Finn. Colin Healy come in, an absolute local hero. Massive, massive game against Waterford, who've had like three managers themselves this season, and it'll be fascinating to see how it goes.
Absolutely, Johnny. Dan, Johnny and Stephen Elliott, thanks a million for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Neil.
Cheers, Neil.
The ads start now. Paddy Power sponsors the Off the Ball Football Show.
Now, you're very welcome back to this Saturday's Off the Ball. Neil Tracy with you for one more hour until 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're in the middle of OTB Football Saturday at the moment. We are streaming live across all of our social platforms on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and on the OTB Sports app as well. You can text us this afternoon, 53106 is the number for that, or you can tweet us as well at Off the Ball. Latest score in the Premiership, Chelsea 2-1 up at home against Southampton. That game, the second half, about to get underway. The players walking back out onto the pitch. Earlier on this afternoon, it finished Everton 2, Liverpool 2 in the Merseyside derby, with Liverpool's late winner for Jordan Henderson ruled out through offside. And also some latest scores just to bring you in the Championship as well. Quite a few games going on there at the moment. While I just load the scores up in front of me, the latest scores in the Championship are, just need to refresh that page, I'll come back to it in a second. The Old Firm derby, I should say as well, finished 2-0 to Rangers. They beat Celtic 2-0 at Celtic Park this afternoon, and the big disappointment for Neil Lennon's side. And then the latest scores in the Championship. Second half's just getting underway. Bournemouth 0, QPR 0, Barnsley 1, Bristol City 0. Scoreless between Birmingham and Sheffield Wednesday, Blackburn and Nottingham Forest, Brentford and Coventry, Luton and Stoke, Middlesbrough and Reading. Not a lot of goals so far today. Then it's 1-0 to Rotherham United against Norwich, Swansea City and Huddersfield 1-1, and it's Wickham 1, Millwall 0 at half-time as well. Dan, I didn't get time to ask you just before the ad break there. We were speaking about the quotes there from John Giles and of Noel King as well, just to reiterate them. John Giles is saying lots of possession but going nowhere, the possession game being overdone. And I think the big one that Johnny took exception to was that Ireland's expectations are overhyped. Your own thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Noel King, he makes some points about, say, facilities and, you know, the standard of our league needing to be better. And I think that's perfectly valid. That, you know, there's things that could be a lot better about the sport in this country. And that's why, you know, it is hard sometimes to compete with leagues. So, say, you know, a lot of the countries that are around the same tier as Ireland, you know, would have a football industry in their country, whereas we wouldn't necessarily have that here. But at the same time, it's still a slightly, a sort of an incredibly negative point of view. I mean, in the sense that, like, Ireland, if you look at it, has a very good representation of young players at the moment in or around the Premier League and the Championship and you know, a talented group. And sometimes you actually need to have, like, a bit more belief. You know, I mean, Noel King is someone who's been in the FAI for a long period of time until recently. Like, he was actually the under-21 manager. He was the head of talent and recruitment. And his time probably as under-21 manager might be synonymous with very, very, very average players being picked up through the grandparent rule and being picked ahead of some quite talented homegrown players who've gone on to have much better careers. And actually, it does make you wonder sometimes if people that, you know, the people that need to be around the FAI need to have a bit more belief and a bit more positivity, because really, you know, so some of that is it's not a progressive mindset. While acknowledging that we have a lot to do as regards our facilities, but I just think generally, I mean, who are we to disagree with John Giles on anything? But to say that the possession game is going nowhere, I think that's possibly more a reference to the Wales game where there's probably passages, but we can clearly see that there has been chances in the last three games. And my only slight fear, of course, is that when the run without a wins builds up, that the danger is that you get to the point where the players sometimes start to doubt it then. You know, there's no doubt you can't help but respond to results. And if, you know, if results don't happen, what are the discussions then? Because the one thing people say, we should change back to like the way we should go back to basics to some degree.
But for me,
we don't have a target man player at the moment to do that. You know,
listen to Noel King. Like, I don't know Noel King personally, but listen, he's been involved in the FEI. But for me, it was like he was afraid to kind of give any credit. And he came across as a little bit kind of bitter to me, like a little bit like he doesn't want to accept that we're going down this different road of playing. And listen, there's no guarantee this road is going to be successful under Stephen Kenny. But we have to try something if we want to change where we're playing. But I just felt like that little kind of interview there, it was a little bit like, no, I'm stuck in my ways. I'm not going to accept that we're going to try and do something, because the only way we can be successful is by what we used to do. And listen, John Giles made some valid points about the target man being on the pitch in that specific game. I agree in the Wales, but I think Noel King came across a little bit bitter. Like the way he was so adamant to speak so negatively about Irish football looked to me as if it was somebody that wasn't happy after being kind of moved out of the FEI, and he looked like a bitter man to me with his interview slightly.
I wasn't mad in the country, but I think there comes a point, and of course, he's not here to defend himself and all, and he's like long association with the FEI, but I mean, he was with the 21s team, and like Noel King last month after two games was coming out with some bizarre stuff that would make you wonder. But like I think some of the commentary in response to what is definitely a disappointing run of results, like there is an element of you just have to accept that this comes when things aren't going badly, but you have to look at some. But for example, like the line that, well, the team aren't scoring, that they should look at bringing Robbie Keane back in there. Now Robbie Keane is hopefully going to go to LA Galaxy now and have a get his managerial career going, and hopefully, I think at some stage in the future it would shock me if Robbie Keane wasn't in a proper discussion about being senior manager. But like Robbie Keane was there last year, like Robbie Keane was in the squad last year. Robbie Keane was at Middlesbrough for the entire season, where they were the lowest scorers in the championship. Now, that's no reflection on him. It's just that it's not that simple, that it's a case of you have this great striker there.
Well, he can't go in and make everybody Robbie Keane.
No, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's just a bizarre. And like some of the suggestions, not Richard Dunn, who I think he's come, but some of the other suggestions of Robbie Keane, to me, it's a bit mischievous. Like people who are around the scene probably know that like Stephen Kenny didn't want Robbie Keane there in his setup. For whatever reason, he wanted to go a different way, and it would actually be in response to five games to suddenly supplant Robbie Keane in there when you have a coaching plan with Keith Andrews and Damien Duff. It would be undermining people. It would be undermining management. And for people to suggest that, like, I just think I'm not sure about. I think there's a disingenuous tone.
Yeah, to be honest with you, Dan,
some of that stuff. You know?
Keep looking at the Irish games. Like we're talking here about a team against Finland that we could have easily scored three goals. Really good chances, like Enda Stevens off the crossbar, the headers going into the box, keeper saving. Like these are good chances where on another day could have gone in. And I know could have, would have, should have, and all this, but that's the reality. If we score them chances, then we score three goals, and nobody's having these conversations about potentially bringing Robbie Keane back in to help score goals or stuff like that. And again, it's all about time. Like, I'm sure Stephen Kenny is aware of the pressure. I'm sure more than anybody else, he's gutted that the games aren't being won, and we're not winning games or even like as comfortably as we would like. But it's a work in progress. Listen, there's no guarantee Stephen Kenny's going to go in there and be a massive success. But at this stage, I think there is a lot of people, I think, especially in Ireland, that are probably a little bit more wanting Stephen Kenny to do well than, say, previous managers, purely for obvious reasons. But at the same time, there's no guarantee it's going to be correct. But there's no point after five games, especially with all that's going on, to say, listen, he's not the man for the job. This isn't the way we should play. We've given him the job. We have to give him the time to try and kind of put his plan in place, and hopefully it becomes successful. Because if we're going to get rid of somebody and talk about him not being the right man, then what's the point in hiring him in the first place? That would be my opinion.
Stephen, on the goals front specifically, just from your own kind of perspective, from your own playing days, what's it like when you're in a team when the goals have been that hard to come by? Not even just for like one specific striker who hasn't been scoring, but as a team, as a collective, when you are creating lots of chances and you might be relatively happy with your overall style of play and the way you've kind of passed things around and controlled the game. but just haven't been able to put the final touches on it. Is it a snowball yeah. effect where the frustration builds up, or are the players actually able to put it out of their minds?
Listen, players are human beings, right? I've been involved in teams myself personally when I've gone on runs where I've not scored. I've been in teams haven't scored many goals at times, but that it's confidence thing as well. And it's like people keep saying one will go in and the like buses, a load of them will come, and that is the case. Like it's like you can be unlucky, but I think obviously you look at the Slovakian game, it does play in your mind. Conor Horan, if that falls on his left foot, people say he's putting that chance straight into the goal. He didn't, it went on his right foot, and it was a bit of a half-hearted effort. But at the same time, this is confidence. That's the thing with the Ireland squad now. Everybody's highlighting the fact, listen, you listen to some of the lads even doing the interviews after the game. I listened to Shane Duffy saying, oh, we believe the goals will come. So the players are believing it, and it's one of them. You just wait for that forcement to go in. And I just think we were really, really unlucky in the Finland game. Listen, Finland created chances as well. We can't get away from that. That they look threatening in attack as well. They played some nice football. It was a pretty good game to watch, I presume, if you're a neutral kind of a neutral fan. But at the same time, I think once we get a goal, we don't have a Robbie Keane there that's going to score you. Guaranteeing you nearly scoring every single game, but we need to find goals from all over our squad, and I think we do have them in there. It's just a matter of getting that force, we're getting the kind of monkey off the back, so to speak. And I don't think Stephen Kenny, he doesn't seem to me as the type of guy that's going to panic. Like he has his plan in place. He's been given this opportunity to go and manage his country, which you can tell he's probably it means the world to him. And I just think we need to give him a little bit more time to implement what he wants to do. And as I said, we hope and pray that the chances will start going in. And listen, he's not going to get forever to make things right. He'll need to kind of click at some stage. But I think we need to give him a little bit more leeway going forward, because I think it'd be very, very, very harsh to start kind of judging him after a couple of months in charge. I know there's obviously five games, but with everything that's gone on alongside, I just think we need to be a little bit more patient.
I'm just going to read out two text messages here, guys, which I think is actually going to sum up, I suppose, the two camps that are out there and probably have been there for some time, with I think a lot of people maybe deciding what camp they're in. First one, can we all stop being so negative about Ireland's results and focus on the positive performances which we saw? We created chances and a number of them at that, so if we can keep doing that, we're going in the right direction and the goals will come. That one is from Ollie in Kilkenny. And directly below that, we have a text from Porrick. Not sure they can afford it, but surely the FAI have to give serious consideration to sacking Stephen Kenny. Ireland are becoming an embarrassment.
Yeah, Porrick could be on the wind-up there. And in fairness, you know, I have to present, like, this is Stephen Kenny's remit was not to kind of win games at all costs. Like, if you want to preside over, like, footballing genocide of Cardiff and win the game 1-0 and try not to do anything remotely involving playing football, that's fine. If you want to be the Irish fan who wants to watch us play like that, that's absolutely fine. Maybe you don't actually enjoy watching football, because it's impossible to enjoy Ireland playing like that. And when you see Darragh O'Shea coming through, when you see Connolly, who still has so much to learn, when you see even established midfielders now suddenly believe that they can do something, when you see Ronan Curtis coming on nearly scoring, when you see the runs that Doherty is making, when you see all the players that he hasn't even had chance to play yet. And maybe if we ask the Irish players honestly, are they enjoying it now? I'd say they absolutely are. And I don't even think there's a massive debate here. It's like, do you want us to play terrible football, or do you want a manager who actually wants us to play nice football and achieve results? Because, you know, Noel King, what players from the under-21s did Noel King educate and bring through? Like, I don't see what the relevance of his comments are when you look at what the progress that we made at 15s, 17s, 19s, 21s. And bear in mind, they are all pretty much playing the style of football now that Stephen Kenny would like. And that's going to bear fruit. And if you're going to be making judgments after five games, you shouldn't be watching football.
But I think it's an interesting one, lads, because I think the debate is, we're obviously stuck in this interminable debate because of the circumstances that we're in. I don't know if there's anyone out there. Like, I wondered if we could imagine we weren't in a COVID world. Like, Ireland play Bulgaria next month, right, in Dublin, off the back of what is like a disappointing run of results. I wonder how many people would go if they could. You know, you think in recent years that we've had sort of, for that type of game, I think it'd be fair to maybe expect 20, 25, 30,000 people. Like, I wonder, are there people out there who have stopped going that would go? And I think, like, they are obviously the factors that would play into even the FAI's mind on anything. Now, I certainly know that the people, influential people in the FAI, are very much bought into the idea of giving Stephen Kenny time. And as I said, this pressure there, it's it's like there's always pressure with the job, but there's no imminent pressure in any degree at all. He will get time. He will get the World Cup. He will get the World Cup campaign. I wonder how many people would go like to the game if they could now, because there's a lot more discussion about it. But is that just because we're desperate for something to talk about? You know, the times that we're in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest around the games, you know?
But see, Dan, see the bigger picture, obviously. Inside, everybody in Ireland kind of who knows Steve and Kenny can kind of see, like, League of Ireland fans, Irish fans can see the way he's trying to play. But the only thing I would say, the bigger picture, like, no, say anybody outside of Ireland would be looking at Ireland, not the lazy people that aren't really watching Ireland play, but are looking at the results going, oh, this is what they'll see. They say, oh, they got rid of Mick McCarthy, now they got this Stephen Kenny lad who wouldn't be very well known going in there managing the team. Oh, they played five games, they've scored one. Straight away, there's going to be a kind of build up of pressure from not just like a kind of a, it's an international football, it's kind of a worldwide football kind of pressure thing. And I think that would be my only kind of the worry, like kind of dealing with not just in Ireland, everywhere. Like people, we want to be seen as a kind of nation to be kind of taken serious as football. And at this moment in time, over the course of them last five games, I think people will look at Ireland now and think, this is what they'll be thinking, they're absolutely rubbish. And they won't pay attention to what's actually happening on the pitch. And as I say, I know that doesn't really matter, like, regarding what Stephen Kenny's trying to do, but I just think it all adds up together when it comes to international football, when you're away and you're speaking to international media and everything like that. And that's, I just hope that it doesn't all kind of get too much, and the FAI or eventually might, you know, if results don't start coming straight away, the FAI panic and think, you know what, we might need to do something quickly, drastic, and then we're back at a stage where we're not really going anywhere.
I think the old FAI probably would have done that because they were so reactive to the mood. And as I said, we don't, like, I mean, Stephen Kenny still hasn't had a chance to manage in front of a crowd in Dublin yet. And we don't know when that's going to be. But listen, we have to be realistic. Like, he needs a win. Like, he does need a win. Like, I think you can see it, because I'm sure even as much as the players, you can see they're buying into it in terms of how they're playing and operating. But like over time, like if they don't have a win, you can see how they suddenly start to doubt it. But like, I mean, just some of the style debates, like some of the discussions, like I still can't believe in 2020, but it's probably natural about our history that we still find ourselves, there's almost a generational desire to keep going back to Jack Charlton's Ireland all the time. Like it's now 30 years ago since Italia 90. Like nowhere else in life are we really analysing how things worked then and how they worked now. Like there's a bit of commentary about, well, Jack's team did this, you know, Jack's team, like, there is, it's there. It's there if you look for it, Johnny. Maybe we shouldn't look for it too much. But, like how we used to, like, the Irish way of playing, the identity. Like, you have to also have an identity that probably suits the style of your players. And it's interesting at the moment that if Ireland even wanted to go more direct, they actually don't have an outstanding, like, target man type player, really, like, or even an old school type one. Like, Martin O'Neill used Daryl Murphy in that role because he was. But if you look at the exceptional players that Ireland have now, the one that Adam Ede is the question mark, because he's obviously, we're developing to see what type of style of player he's going to be. But if you have a situation where your better attacking players are going to be Aaron Connolly, they're going to be Troy Parrott, who is a powerful player, but he's a very skillful player, Michael Obafemi, say, you're actually talking about players who probably need a more elaborate style to suit their skills. So people talk about, well, we need to go back to what we do, you know, get, you know, set pieces and get, you know, get in positions and, you know, get it up early and stuff. We actually have to look at the personnel that you have, and actually we do have a personnel that's probably suited to the way that they're trying to play.
But Dan, see your point there. That's another thing I meant to mention in the game against Finland. I was actually very surprised when he took Sean Maguire off after like 55 minutes or so in the game. I actually felt like himself, Connolly and Daryl Hogan looked to be linking up. No, they weren't outstanding, but I think they looked a real threat when the ball was up around the feet. They linked up well together. And I was actually surprised Stephen Kenny made that change, bringing Brady on after 56 minutes. I was a little bit confused of that. I don't know what you think of that one. That was a little bit of a confusion one, because usually as a forward, like, you kind of, I don't think Sonny Maguire was playing. I think he looked lively, and usually when you're playing lively, you always think you can sniff out a chance. I think he was very hard done by being I tend to disagree a bit there.
I thought his touch for, you know, that chance in the first half was symptomatic of a player who probably wasn't at his best, maybe not getting enough game time as well. But like the Slovakia game almost seems like six months ago at this stage. You forget like how good McGoldrick was in that game, and McGoldrick's role in picking up the ball in pockets and then being able to feed potentially wide players who are actually wide forward forwards are actually going to get into the box. And bear in mind how many chances some of our midfielders had. Hendrick and obviously, Horahan in like really, really good chances that they missed. They never get chances in general play under previous regimes. So McGoldrick and Brown, particularly McGoldrick, I would say Kenny was delighted with him in Slovakia, the way he was playing. And he was a big, big loss because you could tell he was really grown into getting on the ball and linking up with players coming through as well.
I was surprised. Sorry, Slade. I was a bit surprised by the change, all right, that it was that early. Like, I mean, people are learning more about the manager. Like, Stephen Kenny's not one for overdoing the changes. And actually, you can see, like, he made that change, but then it was a while before he made the others. And he's not necessarily someone who, I know with the rules now about five subs, you have to make them in three blocks. And that's why, you know, you're seeing more double subs and stuff happening now. But it was slightly unusual that he made the change that quickly after halftime. He has great faith in Robbie Brady and clearly wanted to get him on the pitch. Or was it because he just wanted to experiment with Aaron Connolly through the middle? And Maguire was sacrificed because of that, because he wants to see how Connolly fares in that role. But I wrote something about this the other day. I think Connolly is obviously probably the most exciting player at the moment. I mean, we'll see. Well, Parrott obviously, you know, has the potential to be, but
and Malumbi, Dan.
But in terms of exciting, in terms of like attacking, Malumbi's a very good player, but it's a different type of excitement. You know what I mean? It's more Connolly.
I think
when
Connolly gets on the ball, Dan, you feel like something's going to happen. Mm.
Yeah,
you know?
But where and do you play him? I still think that's a problem for.
Well, that's it. Like even there, I think he even mentioned it himself after the game. He could have been a little bit selfless and kind of squared the ball when he went through, but that's his eagerness. And at least he was honest enough to come out and admit that and say, "Listen, I'm still learning himself." But I agree, Connolly. That's why I went back to the Slovakian game. Him not being available. He for me has been the best player for Ireland. I know even he's not perfect, but like Dana says, you just feel like he's got something in him. He has that little bit of moment, the magic where he can kind of flip a game on its head, like with a bit of pace, a bit of energy down the side, a little check inside or something, win a penalty or something. I feel like you always get that with him, whereas he excites me at the moment, Connolly, and I just hope he can kind of stay fit and keep playing in the Premier League because I think he can only get better.
It's interesting you say that because, like, he wasn't on the same wavelength as Connolly, not to mind the other players at times the other night, because he made wrong decision after wrong decision. And yes, you look
there though. I
am as well. Aaron Connolly, like Aaron Connolly made so many bad decisions in that game. Yet you look at him and you're like, if you're a defender, you do not want to be marking this guy, particularly in a central position. He's going to pick up the ball. He's going to run at you. He's going to be nipping away. He's going to be dangerous. And you think as well, I thought Darragh O'Shea, I thought some of his play was absolutely outstanding. Malumbi's progress from the Finland game and Lansdowne Road compared to the last couple of games, has been exponential. You can just see him growing into a player. There are three forward players alone. And we haven't mentioned Ida. We haven't mentioned Parrott, who obviously are coming in. There's so much potential there. And that's only scratching the surface.
Guys, I'll just interrupt. We have had a couple of goals at Stamford Bridge between Chelsea and Southampton. It's now 3-2 Chelsea. On 57 minutes, Che Adams scored to make it 2-2 after an absolute howler in defence. Another mix-up between Kepa Arrizabalaga and Kurt Zouma at the back. But just 2 minutes later, Kai Havertz scored for Chelsea to make it 3-2. Just before we finish up on the international stuff, Dan, I might throw this one to you. Despite the disappointing results over the last week, Ireland have had a bit of a lifeline with the way the rankings have fallen, with Slovakia dropping in behind Ireland. Ireland's still a second seed as things stand for a potential World Cup qualifier draw.
Yeah, it's a strange one because, like I said, I like to generally try and keep on top of how these things go, but this one I just sort of assumed the other day that Ireland's loss was actually sending them towards third seed, not realising just the calculations and the sums of it. And yes, Slovakia's defeat against Israel, bizarrely, they've ended up in the second pot at the moment. Maybe they want the November games to be called off now, so they just stay there. And because the draw is probably going to be done in December either way. It does matter. I mean, it does. I mean, now, at the same time, you can still get a very tough team out of pot three or pot four. But it definitely does matter that I think, you know, like the way the World Cup pans out, that basically it's twice as hard to qualify for as the Euros pretty much. So unless, you know, you have to come in the top two of your group, you can't have a lifeline if you come third in your group. So it's definitely important. And I even think as well for Stephen Kenny too, that the structure and the order of the games next year too as well, it's probably now, it almost feels like, you know, just one of those nice soft double headers that you get sometimes, like a Georgia and a Gibraltar or something, just to get a couple of wins, just to get a bit of belief and confidence going. I'd expect them to beat Bulgaria.
We need an Oman friendly, Dan. We need an Oman friendly.
Where's Oman when you need them? But like, I think maybe that's what they, in some respects, just a bit of momentum. Like when Stephen Kenny went to the 21s, in fairness, at the time, they basically manipulated the fixture schedule in such a way that he had a nice start. He like Luxembourg at home and stuff. This is all computerized now, but I think even just a couple of wins to get in the row, but like that World Cup campaign is huge. It's going to be a sprint. They're on about triple headers again next year too, and the draw of course is very, very significant, and being on pot two compared to pot three, it could be a game changer in terms of your options. Definitely.
That's the voice of Dan McDonald, the voice of Dan McDonald. We'll have more from Dan, Johnny Ward and Stephen Elliott after the break here on OTB Football Saturday.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.